Biotech v. Engel. Mr. Wolf.
May it please the Court, William J. Wolf for the Plaintiff Appellant, Intech, Inc., USA. The matter is before the Court after a dismissal by the Northern District of Illinois based on forum non-convene. The action before you centers around two contracts that were attached to the complaint,
before
which is in the record.
Before we get into the dismissal for forum non-convenience, I'm worried about the presence of this case in federal court in the first instance. I gather that John Smith, who is one of Intech's members and whose citizenship therefore counts for jurisdictional purposes, is a citizen of New Zealand. And, of course, we also have citizens of New Zealand and Brazil as the defendants. So we've got foreign citizens both as plaintiffs and defendants. It doesn't look like that's within 1332A. So why are we here?
1332A defines citizenship for someone who is a full-time legal resident of the United States as the United as a citizen for the United States.
Well, so actually, I'll come to the legal consequences of that in a moment. But do we know in this record that Mr. Smith is a permanent resident alien?
I believe that it's in his affidavit, which starts at page 45 of our appendix, that he does clearly state that in his affidavit.
No, what his affidavit states is that he plans to stay here. But what the statute asks is whether his legal status is that of permanent resident alien, that is, an alien admitted for permanent residence. That's a question of legal status rather than of his plans. Do we know in the record what his legal status is with federal immigration officials?
I would have to review the record for that. I wasn't prepared to address.
Our quick check says that the only thing that's there is his statement that he wants to stay, but there's no representation about what his immigration status is. And without having it documented in the record that he holds the status of alien admitted for permanent residence by the immigration officials, you can't take advantage of that trailing paragraph in 1332. So we've got a record question. But then the legal questions follow, which is, suppose we have somebody who is both, under the proviso, a citizen of North Carolina and a citizen of New Zealand on one side and citizens of New Zealand on the other side. Is that a situation in which 1332 allows jurisdiction?
I believe 1332 on its face says that he should be treated, assuming that it is in the record, that he's a full-time legal...
There are two ways to understand that language. One is to say the language means he is treated as a citizen of North Carolina and nothing else. The other is that he's treated, in addition to whatever other citizenship he has, as a citizen of North Carolina. And in that event, the principal thing that statute does is knock people out of the jurisdictional box. It doesn't increase jurisdiction. That's the way it's been read, by the way. Although your brief, neither side's brief, discusses this problem at all. The D.C. Circuit has held that that's the meaning of that trailing clause in 1332A. But I'm interested in the question, what happens if you have a single person who is a citizen of both North Carolina and New Zealand on one side, and a citizen of New Zealand on the other side? What's the legal consequence of that?
Well, there would not be diversity if he is treated as a citizen of New Zealand, and that would be the legal issue.
Your argument, then, as you conceive it, depends on two propositions, which, as I say, it's very disappointing that neither side discusses this in their briefs. This is terribly important to jurisdiction. Your argument depends on two propositions. First, that Mr. Smith is an alien admitted for permanent residence, which, so far as I can see, is not supported in this record. And then on the legal proposition that that trailing proviso in 1332A means that his New Zealand citizenship should be ignored, which would require us to create a conflict with the D.C. Circuit. Is that a fair summary of where we are?
I'm not prepared to address that issue, but...
I know, but jurisdiction is the first question in every case, and as I say, it's disappointing that the jurisdictional statements in the briefs just ignore this. Pretty fundamental.
We did file a supplemental statement of jurisdiction indicating that Mr. Smith's citizenship, as defined under 1332A, was North Carolina, based upon his permanent...
Well, perhaps we need, at the discretion of our presiding judge, some supplemental filings to figure out whether he's an alien admitted for permanent residence, and whether, if so, he is to be treated as exclusively a citizen of North Carolina, or as a citizen of both North Carolina and New Zealand.
I'd be happy to submit a post-argument memorandum.
Yeah, well, we'd like both of you to do so within 10 days.
Thank you. The underlying action arises out of what are essentially two contracts attached to the complaint.
No, what I can't get over, if we get over the jurisdictional bump, I don't understand, of all the possible places to litigate this dispute, Illinois seems to be the last.
Well,
I mean, it's true, by a fluke, you got personal jurisdiction here, but it's not the right place to have the trial. North Carolina would have been fine. New Zealand seems fine, but Illinois seems unfine.
Addressing that specifically, we did file suit initially in North Carolina. These defendants were dismissed for lack of jurisdiction.
Spoiled North Carolina, but you still have New Zealand, where you can have everything in New Zealand. It's a trip. That's true. It's a nice country for lawyers to, you know, work in. So I don't see any real objection to New Zealand as a forum for this trial.
It's not a fluke that it's here.
Civilized, you know, common law.
It's not a fluke that it's here. It's here because the plaintiff, understandably being a U.S. citizen, wants a U.S. forum.
That if they hadn't exhibited their wares, you couldn't have gotten personal jurisdiction in Illinois.
And they were exhibiting their wares here.
Gotten it in, you know, Arizona or Bermuda, something like that. But what is wrong with New Zealand as a forum?
It's inconvenient and inadequate. How can we expect a New Zealand court to try to enforce the unfair trade practices of a United States state? And the parties agreed that North Carolina law would control.
New Zealand, I'm sure, has a concept of conflict of laws, and they understand that sometimes they have to enforce a law of another country, right? All courts do that. They know how to do that. It's no great mystery.
Well, then we respectfully request that the district court be instructed to do that, because enforce the laws of North Carolina in this court, because the legal precedent is.
Ask you, what is wrong with New Zealand?
We don't believe we'd get a fair trial there.
Why wouldn't you get a fair trial in New Zealand?
Well, first of all, the evidence is here in the United States. The evidence
That's
is
not
in North.
A fair trial issue. What is it that you think is unfair about the New Zealand judiciary?
It is unfair because if we can't compel the evidence from the U.S. witnesses, which is no indication that New Zealand would do that, then we wouldn't be able to prove our case.
Well,
this case is here because the conduct occurred.
How are you going to compel evidence from U.S. citizens who aren't within, you know, subpoena range of Chicago?
I can just there's nationwide service of process for subpoenas for discovery purposes, and this whole case will be proved through documents from the U.S. entities that were solicited by the defendants.
Take discovery in the United States and introduce those depositions in New Zealand.
There's nothing in the record that would indicate that could happen. And if you look
what
at
do
page,
you mean nothing in the record. There's a federal statute authorizing that.
There's no indication that the New Zealand court would accept it.
Well, have you done research in New Zealand procedure?
We've actually...
I can tell you, a New Zealand court is going to accept depositions from a foreign country, obviously. Right?
I don't think so, because we've tried... Well, I can't argue things out of the record, but we've tried to get depositions...
There is some bar, a mysterious bar in New Zealand law that would make it an unsuitable form. That you should do research, should have done research and presented us with some New Zealand rule which would show that you couldn't get, you couldn't
is,
have an
Is there some
job.
Rule? Because I will tell you, and you could tell by looking at our cases, we had a case here just last year arising from litigation in Australia where the Australian proceeding needed evidence from the United States, and it was acquired by supplemental proceedings in Wisconsin under this federal statute. And I would be shocked if the same procedures used in Australia are not used next door in New Zealand. Now, if there's some New Zealand law you've got, by all means, please cite it.
Our point was the defendants had a duty to prove that the court was adequate, and they presented the trial court with nothing to show that it would be in this particular case. And so the record does not reflect that it would be in this case, and the plaintiff is a United States company that is appealing to this court for its day in court in a United States court, which is reasonable. And that's what the precedent.
Well, I don't understand. There's stuff in
Look, you engage in international business, you should expect to engage in international litigation. The United States can't be a reliable international trading partner if it takes this hometown rule that its citizens always get its courts and the citizens of New Zealand are stuck with our courts.
What
New Zealand people can be sued here, and U.S. people can litigate in New Zealand. We can play it both ways or neither way.
We are not suggesting that there'd be a blanket rule that we always get our way, but in this case, where the parties agreed North Carolina law would apply, where the conduct complained of occurred in the United States, we do believe it's appropriate to have the matter resolved in the United States.
Maybe
since
in North Carolina, but Illinois would have to apply North Carolina law, and that's what New Zealand would do. So what's the difference?
I don't believe, I'm not convinced that New Zealand would apply North Carolina law.
I don't understand
The contract says it's North Carolina law.
On the contract claims.
Do you think they're lawless in New Zealand?
On the contract claims, I'm unaware of any legal precedent where New Zealand has enforced the unfair.
You've never looked, have you? Do you know anything about conflict of law rules in New Zealand?
No.
No, of course not. So you have no basis for saying anything about whether they would enforce enforce North Carolina law in a contract case, a tort case, or anything else. You just didn't do any work. Didn't do any research.
We did do a lot of work, and we found the precedent.
Didn't do any research on New Zealand law, and therefore you can't advise us that New Zealand courts are less competent than Illinois courts to apply North Carolina law.
I don't think we need to get there because of the other factors present in this case with respect to the private interests of the parties and the convenience of the parties and the law that applies. I think the legal precedent is that this
some
must...
Some witnesses in New Zealand and some are in, you know, North Carolina, right? So there's inconvenience on both sides.
18 witnesses are from the United States. There's no evidence in the record of how many witnesses might be from New Zealand. And obviously it's a great expense. It's literally on the other side of the world. And I don't believe that the attorneys from the United States can even practice there. You have to be a barrister, and you know they still have the common law and the wigs and everything else
in
New Zealand.
You know, it works just the same way in reverse. Your adversaries, although they are citizens of New Zealand, have had to hire U.S. attorneys to litigate in the U.S. I don't see why this gives you any preference.
And they negotiated a deal in the U.S. that is governed by U.S. law, and they still have the same attorneys and are very, very capable attorneys who can handle the matter here. I'm
okay.
Way out of time. I appreciate the court's indulgence.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Perry?
May it please the court, Alan Perry for the defendants and appellees. On the issue of whether New Zealand's an adequate alternative forum, obviously the standard only requires...
Do you have any comment on Judge Easterbrook's jurisdictional inquiry?
Your Honor, I have not looked into the two issues he asked for supplemental briefing on. We raised in our brief the correction to their jurisdictional statement with respect to Mr. Smith only because he's taken different positions in different forums regarding what his citizenship or residency is. So we corrected that part of it. But have not.
But no one did the legal research to figure out the legal consequences of this question.
Well, he has.
And that's something we expect, indeed, we demand that lawyers do. Figuring out subject matter jurisdiction is the first issue. I mean, you got to first base, in a sense, in seeing that there was a factual problem, but then didn't follow up by figuring out what the legal consequences of that problem were.
We apologize for that, Your Honor, and we're glad to submit a post-argument brief on the two points you raised within the 10 days.
I want to say we'd like that in 10 days, addressing the both issues, whether Smith is an alien admitted for permanent residence in the United States, and whether, if so, that destroys our diversity.
Yes, Your Honor, we will do that, certainly. With respect to the forum non-convenes issue, I don't know if you have particular questions, but again, New Zealand has been routinely found to be an adequate alternative forum. We introduced some cases to show that New Zealand courts, in fact, recognize substantially the same claims, the business tort claims that INTEC has raised here. And perhaps the biggest point on that is that the district court, we believe, correctly found that New Zealand law, not North Carolina law, will quite likely govern all but the contract claim. There are four claims here. One is contract, there's civil conspiracy, tortious interference, and the unfair trade practices. And in going through the Illinois most significant relationship test, Judge Conlon found that New Zealand law, not North Carolina law, is likely to govern. So in that sense, a debate about how fair New Zealand law is may not really matter.
Does New Zealand apply a most significant relation test?
Well, that I don't know, Your Honor. I mean,
my one bet is that they probably follow us in starting with forum law on choice of law principles. Australia, at least until very recently, is a strict lex loci delicti jurisdiction. There's been some fuzziness in recent decisions of the High Court of Australia. I'm not sure where New Zealand stands on this.
Well, the majority of the bad acts...
But if you don't know what choice of law principle they use, we won't really be able to guess where they would go on tort arguments.
That's true. But with respect to the adequate alternative forum issue, again, the Supreme Court and Piper Aircraft laid out that basically...
There's some rule nowadays to deal with these renvoi problems.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
Renvoi is R-E-N-V-O-I.
Right. Each jurisdiction points to the other jurisdiction's
right.
law.
No.
Yes, because if jurisdiction A refers to jurisdiction B under its conflict of law rules, but jurisdiction and refers to the whole law of B, including B's conflict of law rules. Now, what if B conflict of law rules refers back to A, including A's conflict of law rules? Then its rules. Then you have this endless back and forth, and
that's right.
There have been efforts to deal with that. I don't know whether there are rules. I mean, it's generally rejected in the United States, but I wondered if there was an international rule or whether this had...
I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of that. I mean, with respect to the adequate alternative forum inquiry, really all we have to look at here is New Zealand such an inadequate forum that it, in effect, provides the plaintiff with no remedy? And the answer to that is clearly no. And New Zealand provides some remedy, in fact, appears to provide substantially the same claims. And so Judge Conlon did not abuse her discretion in concluding that New Zealand was an adequate alternative forum. We likewise believe that she didn't abuse her discretion in going through and weighing the various private and public interest factors. Again, New Zealand has a greater local interest in this dispute, given that many of the parties are from New Zealand. The alleged wrongdoers who supposedly conspired in New Zealand would obviously be of interest to the New Zealand Forum. And the alleged tortious interference and conspiracy and these bad acts all either occurred in or originated from, according to the plaintiff, in New Zealand. And again, Judge Conlon's conclusion would be that New Zealand law would apply, all factors weighing in favor of New Zealand Forum, in addition to the location of witnesses, potential parties being INTEC's affiliate who's based in New Zealand, who's also a party to the same contracts. All of these issues, we believe, pointing in favor of New Zealand and supporting Judge Conlon's opinion. I'm happy to address any other specific forum non-convenience questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Perry. And your time has expired, Mr. Wolf, so